Check it out.
Welcome to Top of the Class. Hear from education experts and get insights from high achievers to learn how you can do the same.
Get into those top schools.
Ready?
Proudly presented by Crimson Education, the world's leader in university admission support.
Hi, Steve. Welcome to another episode of College Tips. It's awesome to have you on. You are our very first College Tips episode, and now we are meeting again to talk all about why amazing applicants get rejected. How are you, firstly?
I'm great. I'm in LA. It's the same weather every day. It's great.
Not so much here in Melbourne. It's a little bit cold here in winter, but getting through it. But yeah, I mean, this topic, I thought about it, and we were just talking off air. When the admission results were coming out, there's a lot of students on LinkedIn, on Twitter, et cetera, who were saying, like, what is going on? How did I not get in? Obviously, like, the 2020 year in general was a very confusing and tough year for students applying because of the changes to the SAT, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure a whole range of different factors that go into why amazing applicants get rejected. But let's go from your side. Like, you've been an admissions officer at UChicago. You've seen a bit. What are your general thoughts on how amazing applicants do end up in the rejection pile?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When you think about it from an admissions perspective, we get, like, when I worked at UChicago, you know, and UChicago is obviously not the only school, but, you know, these highly selective schools get so many good applicants, right? It's not like, you know, the scope of what we get from the admissions office can be a little bit jarring. And if, especially if you're looking at it from the student perspective, it can be kind of hard when you see, like, I don't know, you see, like, the early round, the top kid at your school gets rejected from, you know, Harvard or Yale or UChicago or whatever. And you're like, well, if they can't get it, how am I supposed to get it? Right. And it's this idea of absolutism that I think doesn't translate to college admissions, right? College admissions is holistic. The way that, at least, you know, the perspective that I know really well is U.S. college admission specifically, which is arguably the most subjective way that any country does admissions. I think it's really subjective. It's not at all objective. And I was raised in a Korean household where, you know, there's, like, tests, like, one test a year, the sunung that you take, and then that kind of determines it. And that's very objective, right? So there's goals that you can hit, whereas in the U.S. there's not. So I think that leads to a lot of students who are applying to U.S. schools to have a lot of, like, wanting to find objectivity in a very subjective process, which we try to do in the admissions process, but because a lot of it happens behind closed doors, students just don't know, right? I think first and foremost, the thing to know is that admissions officers are making, there's a few things in mind. One is that there's a team of admissions officers at every school. Each admissions officer has a market that they're in charge of, whether it's, you know, for UChicago, for example, we split up the Chicago region because there's just so many applicants that we get from, like, the Chicago Midwest region, right? We have people who read for, like, the northern suburbs, like New Trier, which is, like, a really amazing large high school in the north suburbs that has, like, a certain type of student. We have, like, highly selective schools in Chicago, like Whitney Young and whatnot, that we have to have, like, specific counselors for. And then we have the Chicago public school system that we have to look at as well, right? So there's different admissions offices for different markets. And as a team, we're all trying to collectively make up an entire class. So it's not like it's one person who's absolutely making the decision. It is calibrated, and the training that we all get is the same, and it is checked multiple times, but there are different people looking at different applications. That's just one thing to keep in mind. And it's not, again, it's not a perfect system because of what it is, but it is by to fit into the calendar academic year that high school, that grade school works within the US and internationally, we need to do it in, like, with this system in mind. So people are we're making a lot of decisions that are trying to shape an entire class. So it's unfortunate, but sometimes there's just, like, a lot of one type of student that is applying. And that doesn't mean that they're any less strong or whatever, but it can be hard. It really gets down to the nitty-gritty in terms of differentiating really strong students if we just are trying to make a well-rounded class, right? We're not looking for well-rounded students. We're looking for a well-rounded class. So what does that mean in terms of who are we getting in? What are we getting in that year, right? Schools prioritize different things as well. At UChicago, we have that, like, quirky, uncommon essay that I think only UChicago people really enjoy writing. I think most people hate those essay topics for good reason. And so when you look at these, like, we've really prioritized, like, how out of the box are you thinking about that? How much of an advocate can you be for yourself and your, like, your point of view, right? Yeah. Other schools might really care about, might care a little bit more about your academics, or might care a little bit more about your grades, whatnot, right? So there is that category there. And I remember when I was in high school too, I went to a really highly academic and really competitive high school. And when I look back at my high school experience, I remember people would be like, well, that kid's really, really great. Like that, like, you know, they'll get it anywhere, and they wouldn't. And I would be really confused at the time. But working in admissions now, you know, the things that you think matter in the, like from the periphery or from the outside is not necessarily what's weighted the most inside of the admissions room. So right. There's a totally different process that we have inside that we obviously can't share because of a myriad of reasons, but just know that, you know, like what students think is like the strongest student isn't necessarily going to translate all the time to strength or good candidacy inside of the room.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the kind of crux of the confusion, right? Like from the outside, students are like, how did they not get in? And admissions officers are just like, well, we're looking for slightly different qualities for our particular university or for the course the student's applying for, or, you know, all these different things. But is there like a list of 3 or 4 or 5 different things that we might be able to go over here? I know it kind of simplifies it a bit, but, and perhaps we can't simplify it, but in any case, we're going to try the admissions process and why these amazing applicants don't get rejected or do get rejected. I would have thought that a couple of things from the top of my head, not being a strategist or a former admissions officer, so please correct me if I'm wrong here, would be asking for too much financial aid, applying for courses that are just super competitive anyway, like, you know, computer science at Stanford or whatever it might be. It could be the fact that, you know, they just stuffed up the strategy, like their applied early decision to the wrong school and then a regular decision, all these different things. And then probably another one could be the fact that just in their essays, for instance, like I know essays tend to be a really big component, particularly at highly selective schools, but it could be the fact that, you know, they wrote about their achievements too much and not about who they actually are as a person. And so the admissions officer was like, yeah, we can see this kid's done a lot, but who are they actually? Like, we don't get a sense of who they are. So what in your mind, though, are a couple of the things that might prevent amazing applicants getting in?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with all of those. No correction necessary. I think those are all for sure things. I mean, I'll go through them one by one. I think the first thing that you said is
Financial aid.
That one's hard because that only really applies to international students who are applying with financial aid. And obviously, you know, for most of these schools, they read need sensitive, not need blind like they do for domestic students. So that obviously can come into play. Unfortunately, that is a reality that there's just less money for international students than there is for domestic students by way of, you know, the way that school endowment, you know, this is how that works. So financial aid for sure. That's the most unfortunate one, in my opinion, and it's the one that is the least in like our control, because sometimes, like, you know, a family just needs money and they're applying internationally, and I don't find it very fair, but that's my own personal opinion on it.
Yes.
But that's obviously a really unfortunate aspect of it. There's an aspect of it, obviously, with the timing of whether or not you're applying early versus like early decision versus early action, right? I mean, if you think about it from the school's perspective, yield is a big thing that they care about in terms of how many students are they accepting versus how many are going to enroll. And early decision is a really great way if schools offer that to kind of like manipulate that number in their favor. So, you know, if you think about it, sometimes, yeah, that strategy happens. But again, that is sometimes unfair because ED can be a hard thing to commit to, financially speaking. And culturally speaking too, like, do you really want to go to that school? Who knows? You know, you haven't gone yet. How would you know?
Yeah.
So those are two things that like are a little bit harder in terms of your major. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's in the US at least, there's a lot more flexibility depending on the school with changing your major. And so some schools read with that in mind. For example, at UChicago, I would say the two most common majors that we get are everyone says they're going to be an econ major. Everyone says they're going to be a bio major. The majority of UChicago admissions officers are alumni, and we all know like very well that the majority of those people are not going to stick out and graduate as econ or bio majors. And as such, we understand that, and we take that into account, right? We know that econ majors are probably going to change to something else, and that's normal. There are some schools I can imagine, like Penn, for example, where like it's really hard to transfer into Wharton, for example, as an undergrad, unless like someone leaves and then there's that one spot. I think I don't really know the ins and outs of like what the logistics of that would look like, but changing majors at like a Penn, for example, would be harder, right? You can't really change majors like into Tisch or whatever, right? Like it's harder at NYU, I'm sure, to like change majors and whatnot. So So just keeping those things in mind, you know, there's obviously a lot of numbers to crunch basically in terms of that, but I don't think that's as important. But the one that you said that for me, I think is usually the biggest lurking variable in like helping students determining whether or not they're gonna like highly selected students get in or not are their essays. I think a lot of times really strong students in terms of what their peers see or what they see are strength in the academic and the extracurricular portion of their application. But essays really do make up a big deal. And like you said, it's a really big part of the highly selective admissions process because for a lot of these schools, we're evaluating you based on who you are entirely. Because the assumption on like a shallow level is that you're going to live at this school, right? You're going to be spending, it's not like like a state school where there is a possibility that you can live at home and just go to class, which is still going to change the way that they read it, the applications, obviously, because they want students to be a part of the student body. Mm-hmm. But like at these highly selective schools, the assumption is that you're moving, like you're going to live in a dorm. A lot of these schools, the housing is mandatory and whatnot, right? Like at UChicago, for example, it's mandatory for 2 years. At Harvard, I think like 95+% of students stay on housing for all 4 years, right? Like the assumption is that you're going to be in a part of this giant, robust student body. And so as such, we need to know who you're going to be for the other 18 hours out of the day when you're not in class or in a club meeting. We need to know who you're going to be, right? And if you write your entire essay about what you've done, or if you're a lot of STEM students, I find have a hard time writing about themselves in a very like non-clinical kind of way. And so, you know, we need to know like who you are. And so there needs to be texture to your application that showcases a side of you that we want to be excited by, you know? And I think it's really hard for students to wrap their heads around why an essay would matter that much. But from our perspective, admissions is all about risk minimizing. That's like all it is, right? That's like what I tell when I work as a strategist, is what I tell my students is that I think a lot of students, they crave objectivity and they crave order. I'm watching Loki right now, so like I'm very much into
me too.
Yes, so you know people crave, you know, that's glorious purpose is to crave order and subjugation or whatever, which is not true, but you know, but if you look at the human brain does crave order, right? And so I think people oftentimes ask me, they're like, well, if I do this, will I get into the school? Or well, if I do this, will that like increase my chances of getting into the school? It's a very common question. Yep. I don't hate the question, but I think it's a very reductive question, because ultimately from our perspective as an admissions officer, all you're doing by admissions is you're taking a risk on a student, right? You're taking a risk because you want them to go to the school. You want them to do well at the school. You want to set them up for success. You want them to be able to graduate within 6 years and like, you know, leave the school. You want them to be able to take the school's name and like do good with it, right? We're trying to find those types of special students. And you want them to be able to contribute to the student body themselves while also taking them away from the resources that we have as an institution, right? Those are like the five things that we're looking for in a student. And so what we look at in an application is basically trying to hedge our bets to minimize the risk that one of those five things or two or whatever don't not happen. Like that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to minimize the risk. So by doing this summer program, that might minimize the risk, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a yes or no. They're just trying to minimize the risk of every applicant and then deciding as a class, what's the most like across the board, minimally risky class that we can make.
Yeah.
So that's where essays come in. And that's why a lot of students just don't tend to do well, is because they're just either one, not minimizing enough risk, but also two, they're just sometimes their essays are just not like the best representation of who they are as a person. And I think therein lies a lot of the issues with that I find with students. It's my biggest advice I tell students all the time is like, go be a kid, like make mistakes, have fun, do the things that like, don't spend your entire life leading up to you when you're 18. Like, I don't know. I mean, for lack of a better phrase, I guess, you know, being a loser, you know what I mean? Like, I really want to emphasize to kids listening that like, there's a lot of perks and there's a lot of worth had and a lot of life lessons learned when you're not holed up doing clubs and academics that can also behoove you objectively in an admission setting. And I think like people forget that. I've been talking for a while, but
No.
Like, there's a lot of essays that like just indicate to me it's so obvious to me that the student hasn't lived a lot of life, and that's okay. But you know, I'm trying to find students that are going to be a great contribution in and out of the classroom when they're at UChicago. And if you only indicate to me that you're going to be a great contribution inside the classroom, it's hard for me to assume that the outside of the classroom will also be true.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, that's a lot to take in, but I know what you said about like the STEM students struggling with their essays. I obviously chatted to a couple of the STEM students on the How I Got In episodes. And they were all like, I had no idea what to write. I didn't know where to start. And, you know, it was with their strategist, they figured out to pull these stories from their past that spoke to who they were and their curiosities and their interests, often outside of the classroom. I was talking to Sophie going to MIT. You know, she spoke about dancing with her sister in her living room because she was living away from school or living away from home, sorry. And she would come home and like, it was so great to see her sister again. She would dance in the living room and she said, like, I love meditation and I would help out my community with meditation and get students through like tough times and we'd all have like, a little meditation club, these kinds of things. And I was like, wow, you know, it's funny that you put that on an application to MIT and that can be the difference that gets you in.
If I'm not mistaken, so Sophie lived in Puerto Rico, right?
Is that, yes.
That's the case, I think. Yeah, I think like these cases that we see a lot of crimson, honestly, and these, like there's a lot of magic in the mundane. And I think there's a lot of students who think that like these mundane things that happen to them every day are just like, because to them, they're so normal that they're not worth writing about. And I think a lot of students think, well, this most impressive award I got is like, should be my best foot forward. And to me, I'm like, well, you already wrote about it. You already have that on your application. And talking about it at length doesn't make it any more impressive to someone whose job is to look at how impressive a student is, right? Like, it's not going to make it more impressive. What impresses me is when the student is able to have the wherewithal and the humility and the capability to show change at such a young age. Like, that's what I'm looking for, right? I'm looking for students who have gone through change in some capacity and are able to showcase that. I'm looking for students who, you know, I'm looking for students basically who I, like the question that I always ask myself when I read at UChicago was, who would they be in the house lounge? I think a lot of schools ask that question in their own format. And, you know, if you tell me about these awards that you're constantly talking about, to me, I'm like, well, are you going to just be like bragging about your awards? Are you going to be hanging on? Are you going to like think that you peaked in high school, you know, and in college? Because I don't want to admit someone that's basically like a cast member from Glee, you know. I don't want like a kid that's like harping on high school all the time. So, you know, showcase that you're capable of change and in a way that showcases, you know, like personal growth. Not like, I have a lot of students who write essays when I work with them, their first draft, and I always try to change it away from this entirely, where they're like, my hardest thing I've ever had to overcome was, and I got a D on a report or on a test once. And I'm like, that's the hardest thing you've ever had to overcome? That's one, boring, but also two, like, I just read an essay. I remember reading this one essay about this kid that got struck by lightning 3 times and like how that affected him each time. And it was crazy. It was a crazy essay. He had a really great application beyond that. But I was like, see, I just read that. And now I'm reading this essay about how like a D in AP US history was like the hardest thing you've ever had to overcome. And it's like,
yeah.
You know, it's just, and that student probably in every other way in their application is like, if a D is the hardest thing you've ever had to overcome, your academics and your extracurriculars are probably amazing. Like, you probably have like great grades. You probably have taken a lot of AP classes. You probably are in a lot of clubs, honestly. But like, beyond that, I don't really know who you are. And I, like you said, you know, and I think that there's a lot of room for essays. And because students don't tend to read each other's essays, they don't think of that as like a metric for how strong an applicant is.
Right.
You know, like people like tell each other, well, I got A's and I got like 1B in this. And they'll be like, oh, well, I know they're in this club and this sports team and this orchestra. And I know that like on paper, but people aren't sharing their essays like online or anything like that. So I think that if that were to be a cultural shift, which I hope doesn't happen, but if that is a cultural shift where people start posting their essays, then maybe people have a better idea of like who strong applicants really are. But as it stands, I don't think that the system in place doesn't really like lend itself to making that clear.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And one more question I've got for you is,
yeah,
is there a luck factor at all that plays into this? Like an admissions officer's reading an applicant and they're an ISF finalist and all these kinds of things. And they're like, wow, this student's going to be like a really good fit for our school. And then they pick up your application and you're an ISF finalist and it got a very similar profile to the student that they've just read. And just because of, you know, the order in which your application is read, you might be like, oh, you know, the admission officer be like, oh, well, that student was very, very similar. We'll admit them, but we won't accept them. Is there that kind of like silly luck factor?
I mean, I'm not going to say that there's not human error, because there is human error. And that's what happens when you are trying to enroll in a system that like is as subjective as US admissions.
Mm-hmm.
I think something to keep in mind is that like an application, it might be read differently from like, for example, I used to be a competitive math athlete, I guess would be the proper term.
Yep.
I'm a former competitive math, Olympian math person. And so if I see someone that's made USAMO, for example, in the US 3-4 times, I'm like, that's impressive. And I carry a lot of weight with that. Whereas someone else might know that USAMO is really impressive, but they didn't compete in it themselves. So they don't know how hard it was to get there, right? So it might not. So there's like things like that where it's like we're trained, but we're not trained in like our lived experiences, right? Like my lived experiences as like a STEM person growing up is different from a lived experience of someone who might understand like writing compositions better than me, right? Like they might be like, well, the Peabody is a really impressive award. And I'm like, well, I've heard of it. I don't know what that is, right? High school students don't win that. But you know what I mean? Like, yes. I don't really know what that is. Or someone who knows music will be like, well, this person won a Grammy. I'm like, I don't know. You know, there's differences in these things, and that's just lived experiences. So because we're expecting a human and not a machine to read these, there is going to be like some error in that, right? We're not also reading the applications like a computer where it's processing them all at before they give the result, right? Because like, if it was a computer system where it was like a graded, like it would evaluate each one in order that it comes in. And then at the end, it would spit out like, here's the top 1%. But we don't do that. We read it in order, like you said, right? We might read one student who's like really, really strong and we'll accept them. And then we might read a really similar application like 10 minutes later. And like, if we only have really room for that one student, for example, we might waitlist the student, even though it's unfair that they just happen to come second. I mean, yeah. I don't think that situation is very rare. I don't think that ever happens. And if that did happen, it was because the first student was really on the fence and the second student was also on the fence. And so like, in terms of like how strong they are, like really strong students, even if they're two of the same, we'll accept both of them. But like, it's usually like, since we're like, we might accept them, we might not. We'll accept this one, but we may not accept this one. Like that's where maybe it might come more into play, but there is human error, obviously. And I don't think it's like, I guess that could be seen as luck, but I think it's just like circumstantial and a part of accepting the fact that if you're going to apply to school in the US, you have to understand that like, there's going to be human error in the process. If you want a more objective system, there's a lot of other English speaking countries in the world that like do offer more objective application processes. But if you want to like come to the US, for example, specifically, like that's just part of like the cost that you're paying to like be allowed to apply.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, it's a very tough application. And I know that obviously like with the SATs removed as a requirement for a lot of schools, mm-hmm. it becomes even more subjective and less objective as a result of that. So exactly. Yeah, it's a very frustrating process for students. But I think ultimately, like, you know, those essays are so critical. And I've spoken to a lot of students, as I said, on the how I got in. And that ability to be able to tell a narrative throughout an application that shares who that student uniquely is and not just their achievements, that has time and time again come up as like the most important way that Crimson has helped students. Like they said, just bouncing the ideas off their strategist and their essay mentors and whoever to kind of say, who am I and what am I going to share with these admissions officers that give them an idea of who I'm going to be on campus? That seems to be obviously very critical. And then it's all like the strategy piece of how much financial aid do you ask for? Which schools do you apply for? Which courses and all these kinds of things, which, you know, some students are applying for courses and they know that like a school is competitive like Stanford and they apply for CS at Stanford and give themselves like a, you know, a very, very small chance of getting in just given how competitive that is.
Yeah. I mean, acceptances are kind of like a perfect storm of everything kind of happening together perfectly. But if it's meant to happen, it will happen. Like I think in one way, shape or form. But yeah, I always tell students just like, just trust the process and do everything that you can do. But like, well, ultimately, once students start thinking about college admissions, really, like there's like in their junior year or 11th grade or whatever the equivalent would be abroad, like mm-hmm. the year that they start to think about this stuff is, it's not too late to change anything, but a lot of the stuff has already been set. So like at the end of the day, like all you can really do is like work on your essays, make sure your application looks readable and is readable and puts your best foot forward. But in terms of like the things that you can't, like the ink that you're putting on the paper, that's already kind of been set. Like you already bought all the ink. Now all you have to do is like write calligraphy that looks pretty. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it is written. It reminds me of the Alchemist, that book there, Maktub. It is written. By the time you're in year 11, there's not a whole lot you can do to change your course, essentially. It's just knowing how to present yourself and make sure that admission officers get a sense of who you are for the application. But Steve, it's been great chatting. I think it's such an interesting topic. I hope this has helped students from wherever they're listening from around the world. And look forward to possibly having you on for more episodes of College Tips in the future.
Of course, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, Steve. Catch you later.
Thanks for listening to Top of the Class. Subscribe for future episodes. For show notes and to plan your best future, head to crimsoneducation.org.